Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Michael Dougherty's 2007 film, Trick or Treat. Joining me, as always, my good friend and roommate, Pat Miller. Pat, what's happening?
Hello, sir.
Joining also our trusty co-host, Tyler Brands. Tyler, what's up?
Boom.
And joining us, a very special guest, the co-founder, head writer, and all-around badass of GeekTyrant.com.
Whoa. Wow.
Joey Parr, a.k.a. Dr. Venkman. Joey, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming back. We, for those of you who are listening for the first time, we generally like to start the show with something that we call the character name game. Joey, I believe this is a new development in the since the time that you've joined. So let me explain the rules very briefly.
Okay.
It's a game where this week it'll be Tyler selects a character, and the rest of us on the panel have to guess what movie that character is from. So, Tyler, go ahead and let us know what the character is, and then we'll actually guess at the very end of the show, but we'll just kind of let it be simmering throughout the length of the podcast. So go ahead, Tyler.
Wait, is it my turn this week?
It is your turn this week.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I'm just gonna randomly think of a character off the top of my head.
Okay.
Let me write it down on this blue card here, game show style. Harlan Pepper.
Harlan Pepper. All right, so...
Harlan Pepper.
Those of you at home playing along, be thinking about that. Don't cheat, because you can and we can't.
We will find you.
Yeah, and we'll come back to it at the very end. So let's move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching on TV, any sort of special events we've attended or things of that sort, books we've read. Pat, we generally start with you. So what have you been consuming lately?
For media consumed today, kind of just wanted to talk about two things. Number one, just wanted to give props to the University of Florida Gators. Watch them pull out a close victory over the Georgia Bulldogs this weekend. So that was – I won't say it was enjoyable, but I'm happy with the results.
Indeed.
And the other thing, just real briefly, I want to hit on again like I did last week. If you're not watching Terriers at 10 o'clock on Wednesdays on FX, please do so because it is a great show and it may be canceled. So we need everybody to watch it and prevent that from happening.
See last week's episode for a more detailed explanation. All right, so... We've got a little bit of an incident that occurred in regards to...
Wait, Ben. Let me take it from here.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. We have a new rivalry on the airwaves right now, and I'm gonna coin the phrase Chiklis Gate. Now, some of you may be familiar with Michael Chiklis. He's a very famous American actor, and you may be familiar with our very own Ben P. or Ben Pearson or whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
Well... Recently, this week even, as recent as this week, Ben P. was cited on Twitter as saying such things as, just gave my 15-minute – oh, wait, no, excuse me. I've lost myself in your Twitter feed.
I'll quote myself right here. I have it right here. Okay.
Wait. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, according to Ben P.'s Twitter account, and I quote, "So ends my short-lived experience – giving No Ordinary Family a chance. Got 15 minutes into this week's episode and couldn't finish it." Now, an interesting point that I'm assuming the episode was bad, or maybe Ben P. was suffering from some type of malaise or sleeping disorder. But regardless, he came out into the world and spoke this. You're free to do so. Well, Michael Chiklis, the same Michael Chiklis from No Ordinary Family, came out and said, "At Ben Pierce, why, Ben? Why? Just wanted to get a man on the street perspective. People love the show, and we are working hard to get better. Suggestions." And he spelled suggestions wrong.
I think he did that, to be fair, because Twitter has a 140-character limit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, well, maybe he should have edited something else. Maybe forgot a period. So we have that. So from what we've seen, Chiklis Gate has begun because Chiklis is now – recognizing the fact that Ben P. exists and that a rivalry has started. Now, Ben P. has come back, said, "At Michael Chiklis," and I quote, "I respect your work and technically everything looks solid, but it feels like the series is taking too long to get going." We have not heard anything from Michael Chiklis' camp up to this point. But NP went on to state, just got called out by at Michael Chiklis about not watching No Ordinary Family anymore. I still dig the guy, but the show just wasn't for me. NP continues to berate Michael Chiklis.
Sounds like a Destin-Geddon match.
And we still wait in angst for what Michael Chiklis may say.
For the record,
he'll show up at NP's house with his Offering Time costume on. Knows. Ben, do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't think he's going to respond again. I think he happened to just randomly stumble across my thing. And since he's an executive producer on the show, I think he legitimately just wanted to know what my thoughts were on it to try to improve the show somehow. I feel terrible about it because, I mean, you say something like that and you don't expect it to actually get back to the people responsible for creating the show. But, like, I stand by my point, you know? Like, I watched the show for the first, whatever, 5 episodes or something.
Yeah.
Just couldn't get into it. So,
what suggestion? He asked for your suggestions incorrectly, of course, but...
Yeah, my suggestion was kind of an implied suggestion about speeding up the pace of the series as a whole, I guess. But, Joey, I believe you actually wanted to talk about No Ordinary Family in your Media Consumed discussion.
Well,
so what do you think about it?
Well, I talked to you this weekend about the show, and one of the things that you brought up was the son in the show. And how he's hiding his powers from the family, and everyone doesn't want to believe that he's lying to them, and all this. They all have these suspicions, but it's like they're still like throwing it off, like, oh, it's okay. He's just trying to keep up with the rest of us, you know. Mm-hmm. And I will say I agree with you that that was played out a little too long in the series. But spoiler alert! Can I do a spoiler alert?
Yeah, you can.
Yes.
Okay. Well. You didn't finish watching the final episode, right?
Right.
Of this first part of the season.
Correct.
Okay. Well, they finally do find out that he's been lying to him this whole time.
Yeah.
So now that's gone. That's out. Okay. But I don't know, the way they did it was kind of, man, I don't want to get too much into detail about it, but regardless, it's out of the bag now. And well, now he's starting to, like, you know, one of the things he did after everybody found out, he's like, you know, he's like in the football team now.
Right.
Well, he decided to, like, I'm not going to use my powers right now. I'm going to, instead of throwing the ball, even though there's 2 receivers wide open in the touchdown field, I'm going to run it and see if I can make a touchdown on my own, which I thought was kind of silly. I would have just thrown the ball. Because even the worst football player could have threw the ball and got a touchdown at that point.
Is Michael Chiklis aware of the movie The Incredibles?
I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure that's where they all got the idea. I mean, it's like when they pitched the idea, it's like, hey, it's like a TV show, live-action TV show of The Incredibles. That was the pitch right there. And everybody was like, let's do it.
Yeah.
But I've enjoyed it. I haven't been completely turned off. I mean, there's parts of the show that could definitely be, you know, they could work on, but all in all, I've been enjoying it, and I think it's been better than NBC's Heroes, which is no longer with us.
Yeah.
But, I'd like to see where they take the story from here.
Yeah, I just, for me, and this is what I actually wanted to talk about in my kind of media consume section, is update people on the shows that I've been keeping up with after our initial kind of discussion about what we were going to start watching at the beginning of the season. And No Ordinary Family is one that I started watching, and now I just can't do it. You know, I've got so much going on. There's a lot of, I mean, everybody's busy, you know, and you only have time for so many things. And this one, it just, honestly, that's what it was. It just took too long to get going, and I feel like I gave it a fair shot, and it just wasn't panning out for me in the way that I kind of hoped the series would. I think it's limited a little bit because it's on network television. I think if it was on something like FX or AMC or something like that, then it might be a little bit more edgy, and I respect the fact that it's a family show, and that's great. It's just not what I'm looking for right now. I mean, that's something that, like, families can watch and, you know, whatever. That's awesome. I just don't – that doesn't align with my personal interests right this second. So that's –
See, out of all the new shows that came out this last season, there's only two that I've been watching, and one is No Ordinary Family, and I've been able to stick with it. The other one's another History Channel show, the IRT Deadliest Roads.
Okay, all right.
Do you watch Ordinary Family with your family?
I do, yeah, I do.
There you go.
My kids love it. So, right.
So that's perfect.
Maybe that's where it shines, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
So, cool. Michael Chiklis, we've settled Chiklis Gate, I hope, for the time being.
Yeah, if he responds again, then I'll be sure to update everybody about what goes on with that. So as far as the rest of the shows that I've been keeping up with, the only ones that I've stayed with have been Terriers, obviously, which we love, Boardwalk Empire, and trying to think of some of the others. I've stopped watching
Lone Star.
Yeah, Lone Star obviously was canceled. I really enjoyed that show for the two episodes that it aired.
Alabama Jones.
Or maybe three. So Lone Star was good. And then Hawaii Five-O, I started, you know, it's just not – it's the same thing as No Ordinary Family. It just didn't get going quickly enough for me, and it's not my thing. And then the same thing also with Undercovers, which I like J.J. Abrams. I like the whole cast. I think they're great. It's just becoming too much of a weekly repetition of the same type of storylines over and over again, and it's not really hitting the same way. And to be fair, to kind of disclose personal biases, I love shows that are serialized, that have a running story throughout the entire season, and stuff like Hawaii Five-O and Undercovers are more episodic in nature. You know, they're for the people who can just, like, come home from work, throw it on, and not be lost in a big storyline of stuff that they have to catch up on or whatever. But I enjoy that process of getting really involved with a TV show that I'm watching. I want to, you know, kind of go deep with it and know what's going on and be privy to these little things that they throw out in episode 2 that you have to know to pick up on a plot point in episode 7 or something. So that's how I just like to watch my TV. And yeah, so there's just kind of a brief update on where I stand with all that stuff right now.
We're going to get a lot of angry Twitter messages.
It's possible.
Abramsgate.
Twitter.com/BenPears.
Hawaii50gate.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll see what happens with that. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on into... Oh, I'm sorry, wait, one more time. Tyler, you had one more thing that you wanted to talk about, right?
Yes, I did. Actually, this is considered my media consume section, I guess. This week I went and saw Riff Trax live. It was actually live from Nashville, Tennessee, but they did a simulcast in theaters around the country. It was like that one of those Fathom events. I don't know if you're familiar with those. I think they're at certain theaters like Regals and stuff. To give you some background, the Mystery Science Theater crew is broken up into like two groups. There's the original guys, and then there's like the guys that finished out the series itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the latter group that does Riff Trax. It's Mike Nelson, Kevin Murphy, and Bill Corbett. And what they do is they show a movie, and this movie was Halloween themed, so it was House on Haunted Hill with Vincent Price.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they come out and they stand with like these stands where they have the script almost and their jokes prepared, so that they're not really riffing off the top of their heads. They have prepared scripts, which I prefer because, you know, there's organization to when they're supposed to say stuff in the movie. And they did like two shorts at the beginning of the movie. And overall, it was really funny. I brought two of my friends and, you know, they don't watch Mystery Science Theater as much as I do, so they might not have appreciated it, but they were laughing too. So I guess it appeals to, you know, Mystery Science Theater fans and non-Mystery Science Theater fans, but the movie itself was pretty funny. I think I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's nothing like The House on Haunted Hill with like Liam Neeson and
Catherine
Zeta-Jones. Yeah, and all those guys. It was a little more corny and suspenseful as opposed to actually scary. So I really enjoy myself. If you guys I think what they do, their website, is you can download like an audio track for movies, for more popular movies, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But they also do like public domain movies where you can download the whole movie and watch it, because I guess they can't sell the Twilight movie with their commentary, so all they can sell is the commentary. So I've never tried out their product because I don't know how to. I mean, it would take me a while to get comfortable with syncing the commentary with the video. But I guess if people know how to do that on their computers, check it out. Riff Tracks.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our discussion of Trick or Treat. This is a movie that came out in 2007, directed by Michael Dougherty.
This is the one night.
Don't forget your costume.
All sorts of things. Roam free.
The Halloween school bus massacre.
Daddy!
Be quiet.
Why?
You'll bother the neighbors.
Okay.
All right, so Trick or Treat was made, actually, I think it was shot back in 2006. It was supposed to come out in October of 07. I remember it being attached to, a trailer of it being attached to the DVD release of 300, Zack Snyder's 300. And ultimately, nothing ever happened. Warner Brothers just kind of put it on the shelf, and eventually it went direct to DVD in October of last year.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out in 2007, October. And there's a couple reasons they say it may have been pulled out is because they didn't want to compete with, I think it was Saw 4 at the time. So they, like, we don't want to be dwarfed by the Saw movie. But then also there's these little things that people are saying that it may have happened due to the fact that Superman Returns didn't do very well at the box office, which Michael Dougherty wrote as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are... There was talk of possibly a falling out between that, between him and the studio. Yeah, and then it ended up on DVD, unfortunately. This would have been a great theatrical release, though.
Yeah.
It's really sad that it didn't happen.
Yeah, and actually the reason that we have Joey on the podcast today is because, in this kind of circular nature, a review for Trick or Treat was actually the first post that I ever wrote for GeekTyrant.com. So
it's true.
Everything's coming back around.
Hold hands.
Oh, yeah. Let's sing a song or something. Let's just go around the circle and just kind of do brief thoughts about what we thought about it, and then we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics. So... Joey, let's start with you. What did you think about Trick or Treat?
I love it. I think it's one of the – it's a classic modern Halloween film. I honestly – and we've talked about this before, and I honestly believe that this is like the definitive Halloween movie.
Mm-hmm.
It encompasses everything that Halloween is about, and it does it in a way that's fun and exciting and violent and sexy, and it's got – all of these awesome ingredients mixed together into a great anthology movie, which we don't see anymore. I mean, these anthology films, they used to do them back in the late 80s, early 90s, like, you know, Tales from the Crypt and Creepshow, a few other ones. I can't name them off the top of my head, but it was cool to see the horror anthology come back in the form of Trick or Treat, and everything works so well together. And now it's like a tradition. It's only been out, you know, for a couple of years, but this is going to be one of those movies that I watch every Halloween.
Right on. Yeah, I had a chance. I bought it at Best Buy. It was on sale for $10. The Blu-ray was on sale for $10. So I bought it, and it's definitely something I'm going to throw on every year in Halloween as well. I guess since I'm already talking, I might as well just go ahead with my thoughts. I'm pretty much mirroring your sentiments, Joey. I think it absolutely is the definitive movie. You know, a lot of people will probably balk at that and say that John Carpenter's Halloween is the definitive Halloween movie.
Yeah.
But just the tone of Trick or Treat is so much fun, and it really does kind of capture this innocence as well as just a respect, you know, it's a respect for the history of the holiday and the traditions involved with it. And there's just a lot of fun that goes into this movie. So I really, really like it, obviously, as evidenced by the fact that I bought it on Blu-ray. So Pat, we'll go around with you. What did you think?
I definitely like this movie. I won't say that I loved it as much as you guys. Yeah, it's definitely fun. And yeah, probably the best part of it is that the central sort of focus of all these events that take place is that it is on Halloween. And I think they do a really good job of making Halloween like the central point of central jumping off point of all these stories.
Cool. And then Tyler, what about you?
A couple of my friends saw this before I did this week, and a lot of them were kind of mad at how they didn't like it. But I finally checked it out, you know, and I don't know if I agree with you as the definitive Halloween movie, but again, I've seen a lot of Halloween movies, especially this month. I won't go as far as to say it's the definitive Halloween movie. Also, I don't know why they use the word innocence to describe the movie, because I feel like it was far from...
Yeah.
Innocent as far as the
really
content. but you know, I found it disturbing and somewhat confusing, but at the same time, you know, I sometimes like movies like that. I don't like being told that I'm an idiot and have everything explained to me at like in the end or in a conclusion or anything. Sometimes I like walking away and having these you know, open-ended thoughts and questions outside of the movie. So if we look, you know, when I talk about it like that, I like the movie. But like I said, the key word I would use to describe it is probably disturbing. But that's kind of a word you want to use when you – or emulate when you're making a Halloween movie. So there you have it.
All right, let me go ahead and respond to that point before we get too far separated from it. By innocence, I meant in this movie, there are, I think, four kind of concentric stories that are going on at about the same time. And what I meant by innocence was in each of these stories, there is a person that is kind of the lore master, you know, somebody who knows a lot about Halloween or the traditions or whatever is going on in that particular storyline, and then kind of passing on this knowledge to another person in that storyline. So I'll
just
say,
right.
In each of the ones, Dylan Baker plays this principal. I think his name is Stephen Wilkins. And like, there's this little fat kid that like comes up and he's like knocking over the pumpkins and just being generally like a douchebag kid on Halloween. And Dylan Baker kind of takes him under his wing and explains to him, you know, the history, like a little bit of the respect for the dead, and you know, the kind of tells him how it really is. And the other story with the kids going out to the site of the bus massacre, the Rhonda, who's the kind of idiot savant, happens to love Halloween, and she tells the little kid dressed as a pirate all about the nature of Halloween and the origins of it and what it actually represents and all that. In the very opening part of the movie, Leslie Bibb, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, it's Tamo Pinnicott, who's the guy who was Agent Ballard in Dollhouse, Joss Whedon's Dollhouse TV series.
Oh, that's I knew I recognized him.
Yeah, they're a couple in the very beginning, and she like comes home and wants to blow out the jack-o'-lantern out front, and he tells her not to do it because there's traditions involved and things like that. So he plays the kind of mentor, the lore master, if you will, in that one. And then there's in the story with the girls, Anna Paquin, her older sister is, you know, kind of guiding her along, and she's, you know, obviously older and a little bit more experienced with what's going on. Lori, Anna Paquin plays Lori, who's this 22-year-old virgin girl who is just really kind of uneasy about the whole thing and, you know, feels a lot of pressure with what's going on. But the sister and her friends kind of take on that mentor role. So that's what I'm talking about with innocence. In each of these stories, there's somebody who's kind of wide-eyed and doesn't really – not fully aware of all of the history and all of the events surrounding the holiday. And each one of these characters, you know, finds out, discovers this knowledge as the movie progresses.
Which is one of the reasons why I think that this movie is kind of – I feel that it is a definitive Halloween movie, because it actually talks about the season of Halloween and what it represents, and it's the legends behind it and all of that stuff, where, you know, something like Halloween, just because the movie's called Halloween doesn't mean, you know – okay, there's a serial killer going around killing people on Halloween. It's not really...
It's not about the holiday.
Yeah, it's not about the holiday.
Sure, yeah, he wears a mask, and, like, the atmosphere and, like, the sense of October is very apparent in John Carpenter's Halloween. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. It doesn't – that's not a central part of it. The holiday itself is not a central part of it.
I hate to say it, but The Nightmare Before Christmas kind of emulates Halloween for me.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more.
I don't think you should hate to say that. I think that's just as much a Halloween movie as it is a Christmas movie.
And that I feel would fall under the category of a sense of innocence, like Halloween in its purest form, as well as, like, maybe, I don't know, Charlie Brown's Halloween special or whatever.
Sure.
But the Great Pumpkin.
Yeah, The Great Pumpkin. But
yeah,
in The Nightmare Before Christmas, I try to watch right in November just so it links
exactly
Christmas and Halloween together.
Nice. Cool. Was there anything in particular that you guys wanted to bring up as far as points in Trick or Treat that you wanted to discuss?
I think for me, if I were to point out maybe not a problem, but just kind of what I would have liked to see rather than what was in this movie was there's four stories?
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely cared more about two of them more so than the other two. I think if and then leading to this is what I would have liked to have seen, if they had made the two stories about the principal and Anna Paquin and, like, her four girlfriends or whatever, if they had made those more prominent and kind of I guess I could have just done with just those two stories is what I'm trying to say. If, like, the whole movie had been just the balance of those two stories, then I would have been fine.
Of which ones? The principal and Anna Paquin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, the Brian Cox one and the school bus one, those are fine stories. They just didn't seem as important to me, maybe.
That was, like, one of my favorite parts. Those are my two favorite.
Really?
Those are my two favorite. I love the fact that it involves these little kids. It's dark and disturbing, but I love the fact that it involves kids, and I love the flashback, and you're looking – I mean, how creepy is it with this guy chaining these poor, frequently mentally challenged kids in a bus whose parents paid them to drive them off the side of a cliff?
Yeah.
And kill them. I mean, that is demented and dark. But I love that. I like dark stories like that, but it's like, and I love the look and the feel of it, and just the masks that the kids were wearing were just so creepy, and, and just the whole story behind that, and then coming back, and, I really enjoyed
that part
of the story.
Yeah, I enjoyed those as well. Like, I didn't have a problem with them. I didn't have a problem with them. I just felt like the other two maybe had a little bit more meat on them, and I would just like to have seen maybe more of that side.
And I agree with you, because I think that the principal one was fairly a short part of the film,
That was the least explained of the four.
Exactly. It was the least explained.
I have no idea what this guy was doing this for, or why he was so weird and killing kids.
And then dressing up and killing people on the street during Halloween.
Yeah, what's up with that?
He's just one of those guys,
These are the kind of people you want working in schools.
Yeah. Maybe the whole thing is just, like, a veiled commentary about the school system.
Yes, I was expecting, like, the fat kid, like, this happened at the beginning of the movie, the fat kid that was, like, knocking down jack-o'-lanterns and was inevitably poisoned by the principal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought later in the movie we would realize, because I know it was back and forth, we would see this fat kid doing something to the principal that warranted death.
That's what I thought when I first saw it as well.
Maybe he was beating up on the little boy. Maybe he had done something to the principal to embarrass him at school, he just straight up murdered this kid just mauled him in a pit in his backyard with a shovel. I don't know if he cut off his finger or something else.
How sad was that, though, when the kid comes back to life and he just starts beating him with the shovel. He's like, there's a kid in this sack.
Yeah.
You know, and he's beating let him to go. Death with a shovel.
You should be lucky the kid's not dead. Just let him go. Don't continue to murder him.
You already poisoned the poor bastard.
And, it's the worst the other, place to put a body.
The other question I kind of have is, when I was watching it this last time, I watched it again last night, is, you know, they show all this candy and stuff and how he pretty much injected the candy with poisons and stuff like that. Now, did all the candy he gave to the kids have that poison in it? Or was it just that one?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, because I kind of thought the same thing. I wasn't sure if he gave it to everybody or just the one kid who was, you know, annoying him.
Mm. He didn't really do anything to annoy him, though. That's the whole thing. Well, he knocked down a few jack-o'-lanterns. I mean,
dude, it very clearly said, take one piece of candy, and the kid was dumping the entire thing in his bag. Like, he had no respect for the holiday. That's what this movie is all about, is the people who
people
have
people not respecting. Yes. Yeah,
now, okay, here's another thing. I thought the little boy would be Sam, or whoever the guy with the bag on his head is.
Yeah, it's Sam.
And then it turns out to be some type of monster.
A pumpkin
monster. So at this point, I'm understanding now that, okay, monsters exist in this world of, you know.
Well, it did have werewolves in it.
Yeah, it did have werewolves. It had, I guess they were werewolves / vampires, too,
there,
I guess.
There were zombies, right? Well, the kids come back from the dead.
Yep. So it was just kind of a strange movie overall, because it really had no explanation to it, so... maybe Halloween isn't supposed to have an explanation. Is that the whole message?
I think so. I think that's what it is. You know, it's like this. It's like anything goes on Halloween, and it's like it doesn't necessarily have to be explained. The only explanation is it's Halloween. You know, like I think that's what
children.
I think that's what the magic of this movie is for me. Like that's why I like it a lot, is because it really does just kind of it takes on Halloween from so many different angles, and like. Covers it from aspects that you've seen certain movies deal with it before, and like certain themes and stuff that are touched on in other movies that are either horror based or touch on Halloween. And this one just combines all of those into one thing. I mean, you know, you can talk all day about how a lot of people don't necessarily care for the whole crossing stories thing, you know, with Crash and Pulp Fiction and all these other things, but yeah, and you know, because it's honestly, let's be real, it's been a little overplayed in the past decade or something, but this, in this particular case, I liked it, you know, I didn't have any issue with that, so that
it
was
really
just...
wasn't that bad if you think about it. There have been worse movies that have tried to do that splice and things happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And I mean, and even like the first scene that, or the credits where they say four tales of terror, you're like, well, obviously all of these tales are going to take place in the same town.
Yeah.
And you see the lady from the first scene in a robot costume.
Yeah.
You just instantly know that you're going to have to set your mind to trying to pick things out and know when things happen based on who you see in the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you see
the principal walk by. Yeah. When they're following Anna Paquin and all this stuff, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, the final scene was really awesome, I thought, where it kind of it sits back and examines, like, it. You see all the characters that you've seen before in the movie all in one, you know, in one quick bit of succession, you know, which actually takes place right before the movie begins, or as the movie is starting, and so it kind of replays the intro again. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I did too. And we should also point out that this movie is based on an animated short that Michael Dougherty did called Season Greetings back in, like, way back in 1996, where he debuted the character of Sam. Have you guys seen the animated short?
I have not. I've heard about it. But
it's on the DVD.
It's on the DVD.
Yeah, so you should probably check it out. It's pretty creepy. It's cool.
Cool. Yeah.
I saw it on the DVD, Venkman, but I did not click on it because I thought it was, like, some type of... like the director saying Happy Halloween to the people that bought the DVD. It's like, that's gay. I'm not watching that.
No, it's his actual animated short. I think he did it while he was in college.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
That was part of when I saw the movie. I actually got to see it in a theater last year, right before it came out on DVD, and Michael Dougherty was there and did a Q&A, and that was, you know, something that he was talking about, was really wanting to create, you know, he said, like, every holiday has a kind of easily identifiable character that's associated with it. I mean, you got the Easter Bunny, you got Santa Claus, all these different things, Cupid for Valentine's Day, but Halloween has a bunch of different creatures and things like that, but it doesn't have one specific kind of iconic character, and that's what he was going for, trying to create Sam, was to create this kind of iconic thing. And I also heard that he is talking about doing a sequel to Trick or Treat. Which,
yeah, I've heard that too, and I really hope it would happen. I'd love to see it happen. But,
you know, a lot of times I would be a little bit more hesitant about something like that, but after seeing this movie and seeing how much Michael Dougherty just loves Halloween. I mean, it's his favorite holiday.
Yeah.
I know that if he treats it with half the respect that he treats this movie, it's going to be good. You know, I don't have any problems with a sequel to this movie. So, yeah, I kind of
Sam versus Jigsaw is what I want to see.
Oh,
the,
man.
The puppet, right?
Yeah.
The one on the bike?
Oh, yeah.
The battle of
chaos.
Battle to the death.
That would be so sweet.
Well, something else that I liked about this movie was that it really seems to play on the horror genre, like on our expectations of it. You know, it pauses in all the right places, and it knows what we want to see as horror fans and as, you know, fans of the scary movies and stuff. There's a part in the very beginning where Leslie Bibb is trying to take down the Halloween decorations in her front yard, and like there's a creepy dude with a mask just standing there staring at her from across the street, and then all of a sudden like a car pulls up and he just takes off the mask and it's just a kid and he gets in and like nothing comes of it. And
yeah, that's then, Halloween right there.
Yeah,
it is Halloween.
And you know, she's like dramatically pulling down these sheets from these ghost sheets from these statue things that she's got set up in the yard, and she's like pulled a bunch of them down and she's hanging on to the last one, sees the kid drive away, and then like dramatically pulls down the last one, and you're expecting, you know, something to be there, some sort of jump scare or something, and then there's nothing there, and you kind of breathe a sigh of relief, and she throws the sheets down into a little box, and then all of a sudden the sheets blow back up out of the box, which obviously is not the most expected thing. So you know, Michael Dougherty does it. He knows exactly what the kind of structure for these types of movies is, and he plays very well within that, I think.
Maybe a Sam versus Jigsaw versus the Leprechaun. In the hood, all three in the hood.
Yes. That would be awesome.
I need to make that movie poster immediately.
One other thing that I noticed was seeing, this is my second time seeing it, and knowing that the girls are werewolves, you pick up on a couple things
of
dialogue
definitely.
That they say along the way after watching it a second time. Yeah. You know, Lori is standing inside of, when before you first see her even, they're in the dressing rooms changing into their Halloween costumes, and the other girls come out and say, hey, come out. You know, Lori stays inside the room, and they say, hey, come out, and she's like, no, I'm not going to come out, and one of them, the sister, says, like, come out or we'll huff and we'll puff, you know, obviously. Yep. A reference to the Big Bad Wolf. And then later on, the older sister says, like, mom always said she was the runt of the litter and stuff. Yep. Like that, you know, there are a couple little things along the way that I didn't catch on the first time, because Dougherty does a very good job of disguising those bits of dialogue as, you know, kind of colloquialisms that normal people would say, but they take on another meaning when you know what the deal is a little bit later. So
exactly.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, anything else you guys wanted to talk about? I mean, you know, we kind of covered a lot of the general stuff and got a little bit more into the specifics. Anything else anybody has?
During the night scenes, you know, all the kids out trick-or-treating and stuff, a lot of those kids are actually little people.
Really?
Yeah, because they shot during the night and they didn't want to get a bunch of kids out there at night, and so they actually cast a bunch of little people as to play kids in the background. Just a little bit of trivia that was interesting.
Yeah, that is.
Kids don't need work.
Well,
little people need work.
with child labor laws and stuff too, you know, they can only work.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But
good choice.
kind of going along with that is the one other thing that I noticed was, like, you know, you see Principal Wilkins, who you don't know that it's him at that point, where he's dressed up kind of like in this Phantom of the Opera-esque costume, and he's going around preying on random women in the alleyways of the town as this parade is going on.
Barbaric.
What's that?
Barbaric.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that I thought was really cool, was that, you know, he kills this girl and just leaves her sitting up against the wall, like...
No motivation.
Next to a drunk person. Yeah, I mean, motivation, like, that... All that aside, I just thought that was a cool thing because, you know, another thing too is, like, he comes to the door when the kids are asking for candy, and he's all covered in the real blood of Charlie, the fat kid. They say, great costume, Principal Wilkins. That's the cool part about Halloween that this movie really kind of revels in is, like...
You can get away with murder.
Yeah, like, it's the perfect night to do whatever you want, and there's no consequences to it because you can leave bodies around and people just think it's decoration.
True.
Well, until, like, you know, the bodies are still there after a week. Like, man, they still haven't cleaned up their yard of the dead bodies.
Yeah, I actually hung out a 6-year-old from a rope to ward off trick or treaters because I don't feel like getting up during the podcast. But it's Halloween, so it's legal.
All right, touche, nice. Touche.
I wanted to say though that the short time run, 82 minutes, I believe.
Yeah,
I think that was a benefit of the movie itself.
Oh, definitely. Because, yeah.
Like, I mean, it could go on forever and be like 5-6 stories of terror, but I think 4 solid interlocking tales, you know, because if you draw it out too much, people tend to view it negatively because it is too much to consume and think about. But when you keep it short like they did, it's a good movie, even though it's 80 minutes long.
Yeah, and it's kind of lighthearted, too. Like, with as much as it deals with the kind of gruesome violence and stuff, like, if you take a step back, like, this is kind of a fun movie. So they don't want to get bogged down with long run times and like, forcing you to take it more seriously than it's intended, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing that just occurred to me, I know that Saw is very popular, and it's coming to an end. This the franchise Saw is coming to an end. With this movie, and I'm not sure what.
No Saw 8, Jigsaw in Space.
Hopefully not.
It's Jason X.
This movie could create a franchise, I think, that could fill the shoes of Saw, because if you just kind of make each one, you know, Trick or Treat, you could be up to Trick or Treat 5 and kind of have a different set of 4 stories for each
movie. Exactly.
That would be totally different, you know?
Exactly. And it would be cool if they even got, like, if Doherty got a thing together where different directors came in and directed one part of the story, you know? Why
kinda
not?
Like Dante's Inferno?
Yeah, exactly.
The animated epic?
Yep.
I like the aspect of that movie because of that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. I think they could very easily do that. And maybe if this movie gains a little bit of traction and has the kind of cult following that it already has, but maybe if it gains a little bit more, Warner Brothers will see that there is kind of a viable property here, and maybe they will kind of revisit it in a couple years' time or something like that and give Doherty that chance, because I'm sure he would love to do something like that.
Yeah.
One other thing that we didn't touch on really was that school bus massacre plotline, and I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but one of the things I really liked about that was the whole aspect of them, the kids, like, getting together to plot against Rhonda and kind of, like, scare her and you know.
But why?
Work up
what a bunch of douchebags, right? I know.
Rhonda was so nice.
Yeah.
I was like, I'd hang out with Rhonda.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the great part is that, like, they do this and just completely, like, you know, scare the crap out of her, basically. And she's the only one, like I said, you know, that's what this whole movie is about, is, like, the only one with any respect for Halloween is the only one who walks away with their lives. So she is the one who gets into the lift or whatever, and she's got, like, a lit jack-o'-lantern, and they're, like, coming back, and the actual zombie kids do rise from the grave, like, afterwards, you know, after.
And she just waves. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
See ya.
Like, that was so perfect. Just, like, her just being like, screw you guys. Like, this is totally what you get for effing with me. So.
Yeah, that was my favorite story by far.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then, like, the Mr. Krieg, the Brian Cox character, ending up actually as the bus driver was kind of cool. I mean, you know, that you probably saw that coming from a mile
away. Yeah, yeah.
But it's still a cool thing. So
I didn't. I saw the picture in the fireplace. That's when I realized it. And then they came knocking on his door. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And I just kind of chuckled to myself. I was like, that's pretty awesome.
I also liked the Brian Cox, like, that character as being, you know, they show his apartment as being like totally filled with alcohol everywhere. Like, he's just this drunken old, like, curmudgeon who hates Halloween and stuff, obviously, as he should, based on, you know, his horrible events in the past. And then, like, when he's, like, messing around with Sam and, like, getting just the crap kicked out of him by this little Halloween demon kid, like, at one point he gets, like, the hand becomes severed or something and is, like, crawling around. And he's like, you're effing kidding me. Like, just the
Adam's family.
Like, the self-awareness of this movie. You know, they don't try to play anything for realism here, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely.
I like such how cool Sam movie. Is made out of pumpkin matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely pumpkin matter.
Yeah, he shoots him with the shotgun, and, like, pumpkin guts go everywhere.
I think that's pretty cool, because, again, like, carving jack-o'-lanterns, everyone's got to pull out that gross... like the stringy gut.
Gutting a pumpkin.
Yeah, with the seeds, and then to have someone be made of that stuff that almost looks like guts and feels like guts is kind of cool.
Yeah.
although that jack-o'-lantern face is pretty demonic, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And then also, you know, the pumpkin head imagery goes well with the kind of Halloween theme, too, with, you know, I think jack-o'-lanterns initially in their... you know, mythology and all that actually were on the heads of little kids, like Jack, you know, in the story or whatever, that where jack-o'-lantern got its name. I think there's like old images, you know, from London and the really kind of old times where there actually was like a pumpkin in place of this person's head. And then like the Legend of Sleepy Hollow has, you know, the pumpkin as the head, and like there's a horror movie called Pumpkinhead, you know, like there's a lot of
Jack Skellington.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's just another incarnation into that, another entry into that.
I like how his name's Sam as opposed to Jack.
Yeah, that too. I mean,
yeah, the name actually comes from an ancient Celtic festival of the dead.
It's like Samhain or something like that.
Samhain.
Gotcha.
Samhain is the original.
Ah, yes, thank you.
Mondo was talking about.
Right on. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, I think that'll pretty much wrap up our discussion on Trick or Treat. I think, I mean, obviously a lot of us liked it, and then I think it's fair to say that, I don't know. Let's do closing thoughts then. So, Pat, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie, and definitely one that you need to make part of your Halloween tradition, I think.
Tyler?
I wouldn't call it the definitive Halloween movie. But it does achieve that disturbing factor that, I guess, if that is what you expect from a Halloween movie, then you'll enjoy this.
Joey?
That's just a fun Halloween movie. And, you know, what can you say? It's just, it's fun to watch, and I enjoy it every time I watch it, so.
Right on. Yeah, I would recommend this to anybody because it's scary and it's... it's violent, but it's not necessarily that scary. It's kind of disturbing, like Tyler's been saying. But even if you're a person who doesn't really care for horror movies, because, I mean, I know, Joey, you love horror movies. And Pat and I both are not really big in the whole horror genre. But I would say that this is probably a safe pick for, you know, people who don't necessarily like scary movies on a regular basis. Just because it's cool. You know, it really is all about more... kind of the mythology and stuff of Halloween than any particular like gruesome kills or anything like that.
What about a 4-year-old child?
Yeah, absolutely. 4-year-olds, I mean, they should be the target audience for this movie.
Yeah. They should be aware that they could be killed at any time by any adult on the Halloween. They just need to have that in the back of their head when they start acting up.
That's pretty good. All right. So, let's go ahead and move on into actually, Tyler, you know, now that October is over, let's go ahead and recalibrate the Apple II, take it out of Halloween mode.
Okay.
And
You want me to do that now before we roll the ticket?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Let me recalibrate here. It's just a few couple switches here.
All right.
Putting in the new floppy disk. All this stuff.
Excellent.
Typing on the keyboard. All right. We're back to regular mode, I guess.
All right. So let's go ahead and pull that Walker Texas Ranger Apple II lever and see what random movie we're going to be watching next week.
Oh, you got it, Ben. All right, we got that famed ticker tape coming out. We got a sci-fi classic, or classic I'm putting up in quotes, Trancers, which follows, I guess, a futuristic bounty hunter named Jack Dark or Jack Knight or something like that.
Jack Death.
Awesome.
Jack Death, that's it. And then a follow-up, I guess we're in double feature mode, Doll Man, which that's it, just Doll Man.
It happens to star, coincidentally, the same star of Trancers, but this person
really?
Plays a bounty hunter who is just over a foot tall, hence the
okay.
name Tall Man.
Oh, well, it'll be a good comparison episode, then. We can see where one succeeds while the other fails as far as bounty hunter
Absolutely.
Theme movies, the same actor.
Yes.
Those are both available on Netflix Instant Watch, so for
nice.
Those of you using Netflix alongside us. Don't have to wait for a CD or a DVD, whatever they're calling them nowadays.
Indeed.
VHSs. So,
well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Well, let's go ahead. If you guys want, you can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And let us know what you think about this show or any of the ones we've done prior or any suggestions for upcoming things. Maybe we can kind of set another calibration for the Apple II. Who knows? We've also got a voicemail number that you can call us at, and that number is 904-469-6566. So we've actually got one voicemail and one email, so let's go ahead and play that voicemail real quick right now. If you call in and leave us a voicemail, you might sound something like this.
Hey, salutations, guys. This is Claudio Vergasso, director of Troll 2, the movie you just reviewed. This movie is very important to me. I thought I put a lot of effort in it, and you guys shined a bit of a bad light on it. It was about living life, experiencing the finer things, travel, everything the family wants in a movie. And I just don't think you, I don't know, sophisticated or how you say, bitter. Well, that's the American way, I guess, but, It was a lot of fun filming movie. Oh, we had tons of espresso and biscotti on set. And thanks, I deaded like 9 of those women on set. Eh? Even that the one Holly like 2 times in 1 day. All right. Thank you guys. Well, good luck. I love your show. Bye bye.
All right, so apparently that was Claudio, the director of Troll 2, the movie that we reviewed last week.
We are getting some famous celebrity calls, Ben.
Yeah,
I'm really surprised by the product we're pushing out right now.
It's getting kind of crazy. I guess we're getting a lot more exposure than I thought.
Yeah, we got Sean Connery last week. We've got Chiklis knocking at our door. And now we have Claudio, the director of a movie we just reviewed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're hitting all the bullet points here, Ben.
Yeah.
Full speed.
The Claudio claims that we put a bit of a bad light on Troll 2. I think we had the most fun of any episode that we have done yet. So if you guys haven't listened to, I believe it was episode 14, check out our review of The Mist and Troll 2 because it was a lot of fun.
Well, if you check out IMDb's page on Troll 2, I mean, I guarantee you that it's up by like 2,000%.
It should be.
That's just a scientific guess, but...
Right. All right, so that was a voicemail. Let's go ahead and move on into the email. So here we go. Brandon writes, "Hey, Ben, Tyler, P. Vader, and Venkman?" I just have a few things I wanted to share with you.
Do you exist?
What?
Number one, I loved your review of Troll 2. I hope you didn't spend too much money to watch it. I found it on Hulu. In addition to Best Worst Movie, I have to recommend you listen to an episode of the Creative Screenwriting Podcast from back in June with a Q&A with the kid and dad from Troll 2. They talk all about it, they talk about it all from the kid's humiliation at school to the origin of the name Drake Floyd and Nilbog to the actor who plays the dad working full-time as a dentist during the shoot. Pretty funny stuff. Number two, Ben, in reference to the latest Geek Tyrant podcast, I totally remember the Halloween tree. It's become somewhat of a collectible. Otherwise, it wouldn't be going for $40 on Amazon. So reference the most recent episode of the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast to figure out what Brandon's talking about there.
Cross promotion.
And number three, I have to say I'm somewhat disappointed in the quality of the listener mail that you guys have been getting recently with shenanigans like fake Sean Connery calling in, people trying to make jokes that belong on the fail blog, among other things. It's almost as if you guys are getting the sludge of listeners at the bottom of the barrel. I feel you.
Dang. That's harsh. Man.
Anyways, still
like,
love.
Slow down there. Slow yeah. down.
Anyways, still love the show. I look forward to the review of Santa's Sleigh, Brandon. So thank you very, very much, Brandon, friend of the show who was one of our first, if not our first, listener email, I believe. So thanks for.
Can we comment on this?
Thanks for coming back. Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
Sludge of the universe, sir. I don't think so. people, send us your voicemail, send us your emails. Anything that makes us laugh is completely welcomed.
Yeah, or anything that you might have to say that happens to be relevant. I don't know that too.
Or irrelevant. We have two different camps here on the podcast. Ben prefers the relevant. I prefer the irrelevant. So your email and your voicemails will be heard and or read.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it's about the movie we're talking about or not.
Yeah, we're not discriminatory with the email and voicemail inboxes.
Everyone who listens to the podcast is 100% high up on our pillars. So.
Right. Also, Brandon mentioned the Creative Screenwriting Podcast. I used to listen to that. I haven't listened to it in a long time. But if you guys are looking for other podcasts to check out and you're big fans of movies, that's definitely one that is probably worth your time, at least for a few episodes, because Jeff Goldsmith, who's the guy who hosts it, does a lot of really cool Q&As with a lot of writers and stuff of really high-profile stuff and kind of goes into their process a little bit and things like that. So check them out. They're on iTunes at Creative Screenwriting Podcast.
Only listen to this podcast, by the
right.
way.
Well, fair enough. And if you're
Jeff Goldblum had a podcast, I'd listen to that probably.
Well, if you're like Tyler and you almost only listen to this podcast, you can find us in iTunes. You can just search for the Not Just New Movies podcast. You can find us on Facebook as well. Type in Not Just New Movies there and you'll find us. And yeah, so again, like I said, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can leave a voicemail 904-469-6566. So let's go ahead and finish up the character name game, Tyler. What was the name one more time?
Okay, the character name game to this week's name is Harlan Pepper.
Harlan Pepper.
Harlan Pepper.
I want to say the goods live hard, sell hard.
That would be incorrect, sir.
All right, anybody else have any guesses?
I have no idea.
Pat, remember, we're trying to guess the movie here.
Okay. I'm going to go with Van Helsing.
That is incorrect.
It's like a mix between Batman and Iron Man because you have Harlan Quinn from Batman
yeah.
and Pepper Potts from Iron Man. So is it
That was
Iron
my thinking.
Batman?
I'm unaware of the existence of that title, but I'm going to say no for now.
All right. So, Tyler, can you give us any sort of clue, maybe year, genre, anything like that?
Genre would probably be mockumentary.
Ooh. Harlan Pepper.
Mockumentary.
Spinal Tap.
Yeah, this is Spinal Tap.
That is incorrect.
Oh, man.
Is it a Christopher Guest mockumentary?
The actor who plays Harlan Pepper is, in fact, Christopher Guest.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Damn.
But again, that is not the correct answer.
Something about a noise, like a loud wind or something.
Mighty wind?
Yeah, a mighty wind.
Ooh. No, that's incorrect.
What's the best in show?
That is correct.
There we go. I'm just
Best in Show from the year 2000. Harlan Pepper was played by Christopher Guest, which was in The Princess Bride. He played Count Tyrone Rugen. He co-starred with Cary Elwes, who played Wesley, who appeared in the first Saw movie, which is in a series that contains Saw 3D, which came out this past weekend.
Nice. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I believe it'll be my turn again next week for that. So we'll see what's going on with the character name game then. Maybe we'll have a little bit more wide release.
You know, Fred Savage was in the Princess Bride, Ben?
I do. He was a little kid.
Yeah, he was the grandson.
The very beginning, yeah.
Good yeah, stuff. He directs episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
He does a fantastic job at that as well. So
I feel like there should be a Princess Bride reunion on that show.
That would be pretty cool. Well, in any case, where can we find more of your work on the internet? Let's go around the circle and start with Pat.
You can still find me at the-life-after.blogspot.com. San Francisco episode is up, ready for viewing.
Nice. And Tyler Brands?
TheSolarSentinel.blogspot.com and Destageddon.blogspot.com, both websites I write for, and you'll find me all over the place there.
Good stuff. And Joey Parr, how about you?
You can find my stuff at geektyrant.com. It's the Geek Tyrant podcast.
Yes. And the and Twitter, right?
Twitter at Geek Tyrant, and Facebook.
I believe it's facebook.com/geektyrantfans. Am I right?
Yes, I believe you are.
Fantastic. Well, you can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. GeekTyrant.com, Filmonic.com, NotJustNewMovies.com, the namesake for this show, and Pat, myself, and Joey on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast, where you can find that in iTunes as well. Also, if you guys are listening to this, leave us a comment in the iTunes page feed thing for the Not Just New Movies podcast. That'd be really awesome, kind of boost our visibility a little bit. Music for our show is normally provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're really great. You can also find them on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. This week, we're going to go in and out on Michael Jackson's Thriller, because really, what other song could you do it on Halloween? So,
oh, yeah.
Special thanks to Joey for coming by and hanging out with us. Joey, appreciate your time. Thanks for
no stopping. No problem. It was fun.
Joey, yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks, as always, to Tyler and Pat. And we will see you guys next week for our viewing of Trancers and Doll Man.
Later.
Have a good
one. See you later. Bum, bum,
The foulest stenches in the air. The funk of 40,000 years. And grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mere mortal can resist the evil of the Thriller.
Ha, 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 ha